Bruce Shapiro, what are the main things, messages you have for us from the Memorial Weekend?
Well, you know, Memorial Day in the U.S., the May holiday is when we mark America's military dead, on the one hand. So it's a theoretically somber holiday. But it's always a holiday of contrast, because it's also not only when we lay wreaths, but when we go to the beach for the summer. It's the beginning, in many ways, of the summer holiday season. Those contrasts were so arrestingly evident this weekend. I am left with three very different, very potent images. One is of this weekend, when the country was on the cusp of 100,000 coronavirus dead, a number greater than the dead of all of our last three wars combined. President Trump went out golfing for the first time since the pandemic started, and spent the weekend, when not golfing, tweeting invective and advancing long debunked conspiracy theories about American media figures and all sorts of insanity, and pushing for rapid reopening. That was one image, President Trump golfing and tweeting. Another image was of Joe Biden emerging for the first time from his basement in a black mask, along with his wife, Joe Biden, also masked, at a military cemetery in Delaware, laying a wreath. And then the final image, probably the most arresting at all, is the front page of the Sunday New York Times, which consisted, as I'm sure many listeners by now know, of nothing but the names of coronavirus dead. More than 1,000 names, which, as the Times pointed out, is of course only 1%, and they filled the entire front page and two inside pages with brief information culled from obituaries. It was reminiscent of the time that Life magazine published the Vietnam War dead of a single week, the soldiers killed in Vietnam of a single week. One of those moments when American journalism actually rises to the occasion.
And what sad words did the president have to say?
The president's sad words consisted of, for example, threatening to move the Republican National Convention from North Carolina if the Democratic governor doesn't hurry up and reopen the state. It consisted of accusing a TV talk show host who's a prominent Trump critic, Joe Scarborough, of murdering a staff member who many years ago died of a heart attack, recirculating a long past conspiracy theory. I mean, it was really an astonishing display of the president now having put aside any pretense of advancing public health or responding to the pandemic, and instead throwing his full weight and energy behind the demand that governors, Republican and Democratic alike, speed the reopening, speed the return to normal economic life, even as deaths in the very states that have been at the heart of his own electorate, the South, the Midwest, places like Alabama, deaths are increasing. Deaths are increasing in rural America. But the president has made the decision that his political interests are best served by increasing economic activity. He has decided that the greatest danger is in a culture of science, is letting the technocrats run things. So he is deliberately now aggressively cultivating the culture of anti-intellectualism, deliberately cultivating what many people are now calling a culture war, as the battleground for his presidential reelection. It's been an astonishing week, even by Trump's own standards, in his decision to go all in with coronavirus and coronavirus resentment and social distancing resentment.
Bruce, please tell me that some prominent Republicans have been critical, that some people are trying to haul him back.
Well, you know, the governors, again, like Larry Hogan in Maryland, and some of the other Republican governors they find themselves in a terrible spot. They are pleading for aid. They have, in some cases, admitted that they are reluctant to criticize the president. You know, Mitt Romney and a couple of the other outlier Republican dissidents are criticizing the president. And there is a whole now raft of Republicans, the Lincoln Project, led, in fact, by George Conway, White House advisor Kellyanne Conway's husband, the anti-Trump Republicans, who are now taking out TV ads criticizing the president's response. The president, of course, returns by calling these people rhinos, Republicans in name only. So they're, you know, the long simmering war in the Republican Party has escalated. But the reality is that the heart of the Republican Party, you know, Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republicans, Governor DeSantis of Florida, governors of a few other key states, are all in with Trump. They're pushing for the rapid reopening of religious services, for example, even though religious services are among the top two vectors for coronavirus infection.
Yeah, but you can't be surprised. You can't be surprised by that because Trump is such an ardent churchgoer.
Well, yes, we've seen this over and over again. You know, the irony here is that it's hard to know which voters the president is really talking to. If you look to the people who flooded the beaches in places like South Carolina and Florida this weekend, they are largely, you know, younger voters, folks, unaffiliated voters, it's been clear, in many cases, folks who may not be voting in large numbers. On the other hand, the people who are dying are the old and older voters, voters in residential communities, in retirement communities, and in care homes. For example, in my state, 69% of the new infections are now in residential facilities for older people of one kind or another. Those folks vote in disproportionate numbers. And we are beginning to see evidence that in Florida, for example, Trump has lost a lot of ground in the senior vote. He carried older Americans, 65 and older, in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. He can't win without them. And yet he is putting them at greater and greater mortal risk on a daily basis. We've never quite had a political moment like this.
We're having a Shapiroette with Bruce about his failed state. And I have take some encouragement from the fact that Obama has re-entered the public arena in his support for Biden. Will that be useful?
Well, certainly it activating the Obama machine, the Obama base, helps Biden, as does the president's unquestionable moral clarity and his ability to speak across constituencies, remembering that there are states that went for Trump that were Obama states before. Well, Michigan, Pennsylvania. This is really, there were counties where there were majority white counties and nonetheless voted for Obama. It helps in that sense. You know, Biden remains in many cases his own worst enemy. We had that on display this week when he went on an African-American podcast, really popular podcast, acquitted himself pretty well, and then at the end said, in response to a question by the host, listen, if you aren't going to vote for me, you aren't black. And, you know, he meant this as a joke. I think most listeners probably understood it as a joke. But on the other hand, it played into the fears within the African-American community, especially among younger black voters, that the Biden campaign is taking black voters for granted, that it assumes, as Hillary Clinton assumed in 2016, that black voters will just show up. It may increase pressure somewhat for him to pick an African-American running mate, but more importantly, it was an illustration of the bumps ahead for Biden as a candidate who repeatedly in his career has put his foot in his own mouth and made trouble for himself in ways that undermined people's confidence in him. At the moment, he's doing well in the polls and in head-to-head matchups in key states. He is beating Trump, something that supposedly the president's own private polling is also showing, the source of a huge explosive outburst by the president not too long ago in the White House, by all accounts. It was also an interesting week for Biden. He did get one bit of good news. We should update listeners on this, on the Tara Reid story. It emerged that Tara Reid has over the years systematically misrepresented her educational background, claiming to have a degree from Antioch College, a university in Ohio, where she in fact took classes, but from which she never took a degree. This has further undercut her credibility as an accuser. So he did get good news on that front, but this episode on the radio program, I think, was a reminder of Joe Biden being his own worst enemy.
Bruce, thank you very much. Bruce Shapiro, our weekly voice of and voice from America.